Hello, this is the Love Letter Squad. I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen, and we welcome you to another half hour of wonderful story and love letter. And today is going to be something a little bit different. We welcome back Darren Main. And Darren is a yoga instructor and the author of several books. He is the author of Yoga and the Path of the Urban Mystic, Inner Tranquility, Hearts and Minds, and that's talking to Christians about homosexuality.
Yes, we talked about that last time.
Right. And the Spiritual Journeys Along the Yellow Brick Road, and we're going to talk about that today. And when I heard that title, I asked Darren to come back, because who doesn't love the Yellow Brick Road? And who in, I guess, what, Western civilization, certainly most of America, hasn't taken that journey with Dorothy countless times.
In The Wizard of Oz.
Yes. Oh, yes. Thank you. In The Wizard of Oz. Okay. So, Darren, I'm just going to go to you and ask you to talk about the journeys along the Yellow Brick Road. What does that mean?
Sure. Well, years ago, I was watching The Wizard of Oz with a little friend of mine. He was 4 at the time.
Now, how old were you?
Oh, I was probably 27 at the time. And he's now 18, which makes me feel very, very old. But as I was, he had never seen The Wizard of Oz. And so we rented it and sat down and watched it. And, you know, you know how we live vicariously through children? You know, we do things with our kids or our nieces and nephews that we did as kids. And we get to re-experience it and remember that. So I watched him. And over the course of this watching this movie, he had all of the emotions, ups and downs. He was excited when it turned to color, and he was afraid when the witch came cackling on, and, you know, sad when Dorothy had to say goodbye to her friends and everything. And I got to thinking, wow, that's like the story of my life. And so I wrote this journal entry.
Exactly, as you just said, it's the story of your life, like the sad and ups and downs and the witch. And
the story of everybody's life. I mean,
right.
Don't we all have to face our wicked witches? Don't we all?
Face them and sometimes be them.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
Not you, of course.
Yes. She cackles.
Which one of you is Glenda and which one of you is the wicked witch?
Oh, between the two of us?
Yeah.
I'm both by turns. I don't know about Teresa.
Yeah. You don't want to share?
We could.
Let me think about it.
So,
let me just say that when one of us is Glenda, the other one, we balance each other.
Yeah. Just give me some fair warning.
I dress more like Glenda. Mm-hmm. Do I?
Yeah. You have a big pink prom dress on. Oh. People can't see that because it's radio. But
it's how I would dress if I could, but go ahead.
And I'm usually in black.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
So anyway, I wrote a journal entry on that. There's that question where Glenda says to Dorothy, are you a good witch or a bad witch? And I thought, what an interesting question.
Yes.
And how would I answer that if somebody asked me that? Not necessarily.
How would you?
Well, I think, like you said, sometimes good, bad. It really depends.
Yes.
But I wrote this journal entry, and I really liked it, so I posted it to my website. And this was back before anybody had websites. Mm-hmm. So my publisher, Findhorn Press, found, I don't know how he stumbled across it, but he saw this journal entry, and he asked me if I'd like to write. I think I put a little note on there that I would like to write a whole book on this, because I had so much fun writing that one journal entry. And he asked me to write the book. And so that was how I got my start publishing. But my basic idea is this. In Jungian psychology, there's something called archetypes.
Mm-hmm.
And without getting too detailed, the basic idea is that the deep unconscious mind doesn't speak in words the way the conscious mind does. It uses symbols. And every culture has its own symbols. Greek mythology, for example, or Hindu mythology, or the stories and parables that Jesus
used. But we learn those.
Used. Right. We learn them, and we can relate to them not because of their literal meaning, but because of their symbolic meaning.
Which we're wired for somehow.
Right.
Is that,
So when you hear the story of the prodigal son or the Garden of Eden, or if you were born in India and you heard a story of Ganesh and his mother and his father and how he got his elephant head and everything, none of that makes literal sense,
mm-hmm.
nor should it.
Mm-hmm.
But like Joseph Campbell said, just because it didn't happen doesn't mean it's not true.
Yes.
And so all of us love The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah.
We all identify with it. We can repeat the words verbatim. We will sometimes be walking through the woods with friends mm-hmm. and start chanting lions and tigers and bears,
yes.
Oh my.
Yes.
You know, and you just, you say these things.
Or even
things.
An emotional. I mean, I've heard people do it when the mother-in-law walks into the room.
Oh, yeah. Lions,
I mean, they do it for, I did hear that once. You know, just, yes, it okay.
So what I did was I took each of the characters and the places in The Wizard of Oz, and I explored them on an archetypal level.
Mm-hmm.
So what part of, what is Dorothy? Not who is Dorothy, because we're all Dorothy. We're all the Wicked Witch. We're all
mm-hmm.
the Tin Man.
Yeah.
But how does her experience and her persona reflect something within myself?
So how does it?
That's a good question. Dorothy represents the soul, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody can sort of interpret it however they want.
Sure.
But I feel like our soul is like Dorothy. We're trying to find home. And we try and find it in many different places. But the only way to really find it is to wake up and realize you never left.
Oh, okay. So that's the final step of that journey.
Exactly. But,
you
have
that,
to
go through
all of these hurdles to
that's
get there.
That's what I was going
to
ask, yeah.
There's that line at the end where the Scarecrow says to Glenda, why didn't you just tell her that at the beginning? And she said, she wouldn't have believed me.
Uh-huh.
She had to figure it out for herself. And so all of us are like Dorothy in that we're asleep, safe at home. And we're looking desperately for home here, there, and everywhere else. We're looking for that feeling of security and home.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have to find it. We just need to wake up.
And actually, as long as you're on that subject, as I recall, because I could lip sync that movie like most people, all the people in her search, like the Tin Man and the Cowardly Lion and the Wizard. And the Scarecrow. Those were all
and
her
the Wicked
family.
Witch.
Those were all her family and neighbors.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, you see at the end that that's exactly who she was with all along. So is that
right.
The kind of thing you're...
Exactly. So when we wake up, it's not like we lose the best parts about Oz or this physical plane we're on. We
mm-hmm.
just wake up and realize all the best parts go with us and none of the scary stuff. We just find what we were always looking for.
Okay, so how about the other characters? Because there were some scary ones. The other characters.
Yeah. Well, the two witches, the good witch and the bad witch, to me, the good witch represents our higher self, that part of us that is always sort of there in the background, sort of like this spiritual GPS system that's sort of guiding us. And it's sort of giving us a little nudge saying, okay, it's time to leave the comfort of Munchkin Land
mm-hmm.
and go on this journey and follow this yellow brick road. And when we get into trouble, you know, causing the snowflakes to fall, and so she wakes up in the field of poppies, stuff
mm-hmm.
like that. That part of our mind is just always sort of there quietly blessing us, pushing us along, never forcing.
And the good witch is beautiful, and the bad witch is ugly.
Exactly.
So talk about that, because that seems a little... and that they each appear unasked for, don't they?
Well, I think both, in some ways, we think of the good witch as bad, or the bad witch as bad, and
mm-hmm.
and Glenda is good,
right.
represented in the beauty and ugliness. But
right.
really, the bad witch, the wicked witch, she was the thing that really propelled Dorothy along,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
She was terrifying. And when you look at your...
She was the challenge, she was the...
Yeah, when you look at your own life, isn't it the darkness? Another big part of the psychotherapy is taking that darkness and exposing it to the light.
Yes.
And anybody who's ever read Wicked or seen the play knows that the Wicked Witch isn't as bad as she appears.
Oh, sure. And there were four of her, by the way. There was the Wicked Witch of the North and the South,
yeah.
and East and the West, but there was only one good fairy.
Well,
good
the... In Baum's books,
uh-huh.
he goes into that more.
Did
well,
he?
There were more than one.
Yeah.
He wrote a number of Oz books. And the movie is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
I focus mostly on the movie because that's what most people know.
Sure.
I wanted to sort of... I believe that's what really set those archetypes into our mass consciousness.
So what about the other characters? I'm so interested in these characters. Go ahead, Tin Man and
well,
Cowardly Lion.
The
and...
Tin Man represents, or we'll start where she started.
Okay.
The first person she met was the Scarecrow,
mm-hmm.
who believed he didn't have a brain. He
mm-hmm.
was constantly use figuring stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the whole journey, he had this the brains to figure stuff out. He was always coming up with a plan. But he had to go through the loop, go through the hurdles of finding his intellect.
So self-inspection in some way. Is that what you're...
Yeah, it's sort of like in you know, in high school or whatever, and you're taking algebra and you say to the teacher, I'm never going to have to do this in real life. And they say, it's good for you. And you're like, yeah, whatever. He had to figure out these sort of puzzles, you know, figure out how to rescue Dorothy from the witch's castle in order to, at the end, when the wizard gives him a diploma, say, oh, yeah, I earned this.
Oh, that's what I was hoping you were going to say.
The diploma didn't give him brains. It just validated.
He discovered that he had them and used them.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you.
And the same is true for the Tin Man. I mean, he was always crying and rusting himself, right?
Mm-hmm. His own worst enemy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He always had the ability to think or to have heart and to feel. He just didn't believe he could. And of course, the lion, same thing. It wasn't that he didn't have courage. He thought that because he was afraid, he didn't have courage.
Good point.
But he was always willing to do what it took, you know, to go into that witch's castle, even though he didn't want to.
Yeah.
And how often is that us? I mean, nobody wants to quit the job and face the uncertainty. It's not that you're not afraid to take leaps of faith, but that you do it anyway.
Mark Twain, I mean, I think maybe some things get attributed to him that weren't, but I thought it was Mark Twain who said, and maybe you'll know, that courage is not, I'm gonna louse this up, bravery is not lack of fear. Bravery is doing something through fear.
I've heard that quote. I don't know the exact.
Bravery doesn't mean you're not afraid. It means you're terrified and you do it anyway. So that's
right.
Exactly.
If you weren't afraid, it wouldn't take courage.
Right, exactly.
You know?
Yes.
It's not really courage to get on an airplane if you're not afraid to fly.
Right.
But if you've got a phobia about flying and then you get on that airplane,
I understand.
Then
that's
the courage.
What about like the more minor characters, like Toto and the Munchkins themselves? My mind's going now, really, that you mentioned all this.
Toto...
Oh, the monkeys, those wicked little wretched creatures. You're smiling about them, so you must have a reason.
Yeah. I talk about all of them in the book.
Okay, go ahead.
Toto, I actually wrote the Toto section while I was in Thailand. And to me, Toto is the one character that all the characters existed in both Oz and in Kansas. But Toto is the one character that comes with her and leaves with her. And so I view Toto as an extension of the soul. And I see, if you look at Toto's character, he doesn't have any speaking lines, of course, but he's always seemingly getting Dorothy into trouble. From the very beginning, when he bites Elmira Gulch on the ankle, he's just
jumping
always
out of the basket, jumping
for the cat when, you know, she thinks she's going to go off in the balloon.
Yeah.
He seems to be just sort of crazy and annoying. Like, why do you keep doing this to me? But if you think about it, he jumped out of that basket because she hadn't learned her lesson yet.
That's what I'm asking.
Right? Mm-hmm. And she never would have gone on the journey through Oz to realize how much she valued home had he not bitten Elmira Gulch on the ankle.
Because so much of what motivated her was saving Toto.
Right.
Which you're saying is...
She was so devoted to him, and he was completely devoted to her, but in this wildly free way. Right? And how many times do we find ourselves just driving down that country road for no particular reason to find that there's something there that we need to see?
Yeah, that's so interesting. I thought you were going to say Toto was somehow her unconditional love that she brought with her.
I think he was. Yeah. But I focused, and
you're right.
I think there's so many things we could, all of these characters, I could write another whole book easily. Maybe I'll do that.
You should. Okay, so what about the Munchkins?
The Munchkins, to me, represent our biological family or our birth family. Or, you know, maybe we're adopted or whatever, but our childhood tribe is what I call it. They're the people that teach us how to survive in the world. They welcome her to Munchkin Land. They give her a lollipop. They teach her the rules of the road, so to speak.
Well, why do they have to be so different? Why do they have to look different and sound different?
Well,
in other words,
they
weren't really children.
I think that all of us have the experience, no matter how loving our family is, and I consider my family very loving, of feeling like we don't quite fit in.
Isn't that a famous thing? The wish that you were, the feeling that, and God's on your side, you actually were adopted and you're going to find your real family someday?
Yeah, I felt like that a lot in high school.
They're going to be nicer to you?
My real mother wouldn't do that.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I think we feel, even though the Munchkins were completely hospitable and accommodating, and on the one hand, it was beautiful there, and she could have hung out with them, but she needed something different. She needed something more. So in many ways, our childhood tribe is our adopted tribe.
Oh, I see.
And the flip side of that, I would say, is the three main areas she visits are Munchkin Land, which is her childhood tribe, and then the Emerald City, which is her spiritual tribe, mm-hmm. her adult tribe. And they sort of provide a sanctuary where she can recoup and get her manicure and pedicure and get her hair done and rest and relax. But even that...
At the end of that yellow brick road.
Well, it's about halfway before the wizard says you got to go into the witch's castle. It's that place where we go to regroup.
Mm-hmm.
And so that may include people from our childhood tribe, but it may be our church community, or it may be our synagogue or mosque, or it may just be, you know, those people that come into our lives and support us and change us, encourage us, and eventually say, you know, you need to look at this. You need to go into that witch's castle.
So what about the road itself, Yellow Brick Road?
I see that as the spiritual path. We all have one to follow. And walking is not easy. The hardest part is those first few steps. But along the way, some of it's really beautiful, mm-hmm. and you meet some incredible friends along the way. But some of it's really dark, going through...
But it itself remained bright and yellow and
right,
easy
but
to
and sometimes
some
it was
way.
Sort of cracked, in the, you know, like when she's going through the forest mm-hmm. and the lions and tigers and bears scene. So we all have that. We all have our yellow brick road that we can choose to walk or sit on the side and stare at a fence post, right? But it leads us through all these different experiences. It's not taking us to a place, because as I said in the beginning, she's just asleep at home.
Right.
It's all a process of awakening, but the path leads us through all of these experiences that allow her to find her power.
Now, I have a question about that. You're saying she's asleep at home. She's actually been knocked unconscious.
Yeah.
So that's like a deeper level.
She's very unconscious.
That's more than sleep. Mm-hmm. That's, yes. Although, are you unconscious when you're asleep?
I don't. In the yogic tradition, if you look at the Yoga Sutras, uh-huh. they talk about the different levels of consciousness,
say,
which is
yes.
a big thorny issue. But basically, there's sleep. Just as a sleep therapist knows about REM sleep uh-huh. and deep sleep.
Mm-hmm.
She was at that deepest level.
I would
she
think,
wasn't.
May I ask why it's a thorny issue?
Well, it's just it's not thorny, controversial.
Oh,
thorny.
Complicated.
It's just very, very complicated.
Yes, okay. All right. So more characters. I'm loving this.
Well, can I ask what is home?
I believe home is it's not a place. It's an experience. I think that all of us feel not at home in our physical bodies. And we seek, on some level, we're like homing pigeons. We know there's something missing. And different people will use different words. But we're all sort of seeking something. Some people seek it in a bottle of booze. Some people seek it in religion. Some people seek it in a relationship.
So you're saying that where you feel you belong.
Right.
And
most of
false.
Us don't even know what that is anymore. We think we found it in all of these things within Oz. In Eastern philosophy, it's called Maya. Maya is the illusion.
Mm-hmm.
That's Oz. It can be very beautiful. It can be very ugly. It can be scary. But it's all an illusion. You think you're this body. You think you're this relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You think you're
mm-hmm.
your career. You think all of these things define who you are. But like Dorothy, we're all just asleep having this dream of Maya.
I actually saw a revolting commercial the other day.
And no.
Just one?
The other day, this one stuck. Because, and I don't remember the product, but...
And it didn't work very well, did it?
It's a car, and it says, the things we make, make us.
Mm.
And I thought, that's so unfair to put up something so off track for the public to see. But yes, so that's what you're saying, that we get fooled into...
Yeah. When my great aunt passed away, this was years and years ago, they were given the homily. It was a Catholic mass. So it was very sort of somber. And the speaker has picked up a radio station, and it was that Sprite ad.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, what people like most about Ethel, and it picked up right at the perfect moment, is, we like the Sprite in you.
Oh, how cute.
Which she would have been mortified.
Oh, she would have. Oh, because it was so irreligious, you mean?
Oh, yeah. She was very, like,
but
an old school mom.
But you're smiling because it was right to the point. Yes. So back to, the Yellow Brick Road and the Wizard.
The Wizard, to me, represents religion. Mm-hmm. And this might be a little bit complicated, because it doesn't have to be a formal religion. Mm-hmm. We all have religion in one form. Even atheists have religion. We're all trying to answer questions. Why are we here? What is the purpose of life? What is, what is my function in all of this, whatever this is? We have tons of wizards to choose from, gurus and organized religion and even science to a certain extent.
Oh, for sure.
All trying to explain why are we here, what is the purpose, how do I find happiness? Some wizards are relatively good. They're noble and honorable. And some wizards are not so good. Mm-hmm. The wizard, regardless of whether your wizard or my wizard or what I view as my wizard, that external thing is good or bad, he's very important. Because if Dorothy didn't believe the wizard that she heard about in Munchkinland could bring her home, she never would have walked her Yellow Brick Road. The wizard inspired her to take those steps.
He was the pull.
But in the end, and this is the most important thing, she needed to pull back that curtain and see that he was just a man.
Mm-hmm. And she
so whether it's a book like the Bible or the Bhagavad Gita, a religion, Catholicism, sure. Judaism, whatever, or a guru, whatever your wizard is, at some point, you need to pull back the curtain and see that those are just man-made things. And while they may have inspired you, while they may have been important, you have to learn that they're just man-made.
Well, she was led to believe that he could do more for her than he could.
Right. But had she not sought him out and gone into the witch's castle like he told her to do, she never would have found the power of her own ruby slippers.
Right.
So she needed him. We were talking off air in the pre-interview,
yes,
where she says, you're a very bad man. He's like, no, I'm a very good man.
She's
I'm just
irate.
A very bad wizard.
Yes, I know. It's one of my favorite lines in all of...
Yeah.
Yes. And that really says so much. But even in the beginning, when she runs away, she finds him, that same character, and he's kind of a snake oil salesman, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, he is what he is. He stays true.
He's a humbug in the sense that he can't really see into her crystal ball or any see her future or whatever. Mm-hmm. He's sort of faking the whole thing. And yet he inspired her to go back home. So not all wizards are equal. You know what I mean? Some wizards, even though they're sort of still man-made and charlatans in their own way, will at least have your best interest at heart.
I was gonna say, he meant well. Yes.
He meant well, even though he was a fraud.
Yeah.
Not all wizards are like that, of course.
So what do you say about a person, now we're back to real life, not the wizard, but someone who deludes himself into thinking he can help and be the leader or the guide? And, there's that kind of, I look at some of our politicians for a perfectly good example, and maybe religious life also. They think they can, and they talk themselves into it and then take that role.
I think it's a big power trip.
The word. Thank you.
I think if you look at someone like a Hitler, who is just the most egregious example in modern times, Hitler recognized that people have that need. We all have this need to have our basic needs met and to deal with our suffering. And what Hitler was really skilled at doing is saying, I feel your pain. I feel your suffering.
And I've got the answer.
And the problem is not within yourself. It is those Jewish people over there. If we can just get rid of those Jews and take over Europe and then the world, and let's get rid of the gypsies and the gays too,
and
then eventually the Catholics, right. You know, then you will be happy. And we are so desperate, all of us, to have those needs answered, to feel like there's a purpose and that there's something I can do about this suffering and this fear.
And that you're among the most worthwhile group on Earth.
Right. You're so somebody who can tap into that basic need and who is basically evil, who does not have your best interests at heart, who's just on a power trip, is very dangerous.
Now,
so
how old were you?
Being vigilant is really important.
Oh, good. Yes. How old were you when you first saw it? How old were you, Teresa? Everybody.
I can remember it vividly. I was 5 years old, and I was scared to death when the witch got reduced to a puddle of green goo.
Oh, you know, I was going to mention that. Also, there was a really practical way to get rid of the evil.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very handy.
Liquidator.
Yes.
Very resourceful.
Yes. But so you can get rid of the evil easily if you, as you say, are vigilant and you keep your eyes open.
Well, I think that Dorothy, when she liquidated the witch, she threw water on her. But throwing the water was just symbolic. Wicked witches derive their power from our fear.
Yeah.
So as long as Dorothy was afraid of the witch and wasn't fully willing to face her, then she had no power over her.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as her friend was in danger, the scarecrow was on fire, and she threw that water, she took a stand, and she was, at least in that moment, no longer afraid, the Wicked Witch just melted away.
Yes. Oh, this is so nice.
Yeah. You asked me how old I was when I saw The Wizard of Oz. I think the better question is, how old was I when I saw the whole movie?
As it is. You mean like you see it now? Or
well, no, because the first two or three times I saw it, I don't think I got past Munchkin Land.
Because
the Wicked Witch would come cackling
on. Oh, and you were gone.
And I was terrified. And then there were all that scene like where she's sort of creeping around behind the trees and stuff.
Yeah.
That was almost more scary because she was just always sort of lurching around in the background. And,
okay, so how old were you when you saw the whole thing?
Oh, I was probably 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm. And it took bravery for you to stick to it?
It was really hard to sit through it as a kid.
It is a terrifying thing.
Mm.
Which is kind of interesting that I've always thought, anyway, that children need, we all needed that. Parents sometimes don't want their children to see violent or scary things or ogres. And I think we need that as children so that we learn that the helpless can vanquish the terrible.
Yeah. I think there's two different kinds of scary. I think like The Wizard of Oz is fictional. It's a step removed from reality. And so I think that is different than having a child watch Friday the 13th at age 4.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
There seems to be... Well,
right.
Somebody was telling me Disney movies. I forget which two, but there's only two Disney movies in which both parents were present.
Oh, what?
I don't remember which two they are. I can't even think of them. But either a parent dies, or the child only...
The stepmother, Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty.
Aladdin.
Gretel. Aladdin didn't have any parents, and Jasmine, only her father.
And Shirley Temple movies, every one of them. The Shirley Temple movie, she was always some little waif who threw her own child, who didn't have parents. Or had maybe one who was in search of another. They were both lost. You're so right.
Yeah.
And it was her charm and pleasing ways and intelligence that not only got her through, but usually put her in charge of the adults. Oh, we are having to say goodbye. I am so sorry.
We got so into it we didn't notice the time. Oh. Thank you for joining us today, Darren.
You.
And thank you to our listening audience. And please join us every week at this time.
Bye.
Bye.
How overworked we are.